Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 18 of Commentary. Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And today we are going to be looking at Richard Matheson's career as a writer of books that were turned into movies on the whole. This is our recap, Part 10 in the series. But before we get started, let's touch on the Parsec Awards, which we just went to down in Atlanta at DragonCon. We were nominated for Best Speculative Fiction Fan or News Podcast Specific. The winner was Rebel Force Radio, which is by Jimmy Mack and Jason Swank. But yeah, it was still great to go to the show and to meet a couple people from both the Two Minute Time Lord and Doctor Who Verity. And you know, it was fun to be there. You know, to hear Chris Gore read your name, I mean, that's pretty cool. You can't really ask for anything more than that. So, congrats to Rebel Force Radio, and thanks to the Parsec Awards and everyone else for nominating us or shortlisting us or whatever you want to call it. And if you want to hear a little bit more about our experience at Dragon Con, check out this week's episode of Commentary Track Stars Off Topic over on CommentaryTrackStars.com, so look for that there. All right, as soon as the ceremony ended, I looked at my watch and I saw that we were only a half an hour away from a panel that was going on in another hotel about Richard Matheson and his career. So we hightailed it over there in order to see some people. Their names I don't remember, but they were various authors and writers,
yeah,
for magazines and stuff like that who knew about Matheson or knew Matheson personally. There was one guy in particular who had interviewed him a bunch of times and even met him, you know, at his house and stuff like that. And he had a lot of information about Richard Matheson, and we sort of took the opportunity to get the inside scoop on some of the things that we're going to be talking about this week. But let's just start at the beginning and work our way up. The first novel that he wrote was in 1953. It was called Someone is Bleeding. Now, what did you think about that? It was a piece of detective fiction, no real horror or sci-fi elements involved in it, you know, almost more Chandler-esque than anything. Which is interesting, because one of the things that this guy said was that in addition to being influenced by the science fiction and horror writers at the time, such as Bradbury, he was also influenced by people like Hammett and Chandler. And I think you can see that in a lot of his work, but especially here in his early stuff where it is kind of like crime fiction.
Sure, on the textual level, sure, but it's also very clearly a horror novel. Someone is Bleeding is basically a monster book. It's a movie. It's a book about a monster. The movie is definitely a movie about a monster. There's a monster. It just happens to be a completely, like, normal human being from a physical standpoint. She's just crazy,
mm-hmm,
in a very weird way.
Yeah. So what did you think of Someone is Bleeding?
It's, you know, it's well written. It's a good read. It's not like nearly as good as Matheson ended up doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't think it was very good at all, really. I mean, some of the stuff in there was interesting in terms of the style and everything, but on the whole, I thought that the characters lacked motivation and the story was kind of flimsy. But 21 years later, it was adapted into a movie by George Lautner called Icy Breasts. What did you think about
that? That's the translation, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Le Sang de Glace, I think it was.
It's not great.
Yeah, I didn't think it was very good either. It seemed like kind of a surface-level version of Someone is Bleeding. You know, what little subtext the book had, which I found to be interesting, was lost here. And it became sort of like just a series of events, you know, motivated more by plot than anything else, and the plot was pretty weak. So, all right, so moving on. A year later, Matheson wrote the novel I Am Legend, which was a vampire story about a guy who was essentially the last man on Earth trying to fight off the vampires post-apocalyptically and whatnot. So what did you think about I Am Legend?
I think I mentioned it in the episode. That's definitely my favorite of Matheson's novels. I think it's his best novel. There are too many good things about it to go into, but it's basically unbelievably amazing.
I would agree that I Am Legend is Matheson's best novel. I really liked the idea of approaching this material, you know, vampires, which is generally based in the fantasy realm, and looking at scientific explanations for all of those fantasy elements that are usually found in other vampire stories. I also thought it was a really good depiction of a post-apocalyptic world and a guy living alone in that environment. And it really sort of packed a punch in a lot of ways. This book has been adapted 3 times for the screen. The first one came 10 years after the fact, and that was The Last Man on Earth, which was written by Matheson himself and directed by, well, I guess a number of people. It's kind of vague as to who is actually the guy. But the credited director, at least for the American version, was Sidney Salchow. It was a low-budget version starring Vincent Price, and I would say that it is probably the closest to the book. That being said, I think that the production value really kind of killed this movie, and in the end, it's not very good.
I really don't get that. It never felt low-budget to me. It's not a big story.
To me, what I see when I watch this movie is that I'm watching a movie. And I could never buy into this reality because it feels like I'm watching a movie. And maybe that's not the filmmaker's fault, although I think that there are some choices that they could have made which would have made for a better movie. But
see, that's interesting because that's exactly how I feel about The Omega Man.
Well, The Omega Man was made 7 years after Last Man on Earth in 1971. It was directed by Boris Segal and it starred Charlton Heston. It took some great liberties with the story, and I thought that it was really actually pretty stupid. So that was kind of a failure as well. And then in 2007, Francis Lawrence made the big budget version of I Am Legend called I Am Legend with Will Smith.
Yeah.
What did you think about that one?
It has, in a lot of ways, sort of resolved a lot of problems with the book, but the theatrical ending is so abysmal, I am reluctant to give it any praise.
Yeah, I guess for me, I would look at it more as the alternate ending being the real ending and the theatrical one being just sort of an artifact of, a few months when this movie played in theaters, but
it's so insulting to the novel. It's so insulting to the intent of the novel that to me the idea that Francis Lawrence's name was on it it makes him look bad to me.
Yeah, there's so much stuff that goes on with the studio and everything like that. I mean, the fact that Francis Lawrence was like, I have another ending which is better, and I want people to see it, and here's an alternate version of the movie. That, to me, suggests that, I can't hold the other thing against him. But if you look at the movie on the whole, I do think that it was quite good, and I would recommend it to anyone, really. I don't think it's as good as the book, but some of the stuff that they were doing in there was really interesting, and
I do feel that if you somehow like extracted elements from I Am Legend and put those pieces together alongside Last Man on Earth, you could theoretically have something that's as good as the book.
Well, when we were there, one of the people who was on the panel who had interviewed Matheson said that he considered the movie versions of I Am Legend to be the big disappointment of his career. Matheson was very fond of the book, as is everyone, and the idea that
I don't think vampires like it.
No one had been able to adapt it successfully for the big screen was something which bothered him quite a bit. And, I guess I can see that. This guy said that when he asked Matheson about I Am Legend, I guess off the record, Matheson said that he thought that the movie was very well made, but didn't have a whole lot to do with his book. Matheson kind of thought that the big problem with Last Man on Earth was Vincent Price. And when he heard that Charlton Heston had been cast in Omega Man, he thought that that was perfect casting. It's just that the movie itself really had nothing to do with his book. So he said that, you know, if he could have taken Charlton Heston and put him into Last Man on Earth, that would have been the version of the movie that he would like to have seen. So in 1956, Richard Matheson wrote The Shrinking Man, which was adapted twice into movies, which we'll get to in a second. But what did you think of the book, The Shrinking Man?
Well, in the episode we talk about it, but it's you know, it's a stupid idea for a story. Shrinking, in beginning, these are not solid concepts for science fiction, and they are so fuzzy that it doesn't hold up under any sort of scrutiny. And in the story, in the novel, there's a lot of stuff that goes on to do with interpersonal relationships and the character going through things. And a lot of that becomes non-existent towards the end of the story. And the story is also sort of like it bounces back and forth in time, so that when he's shrinking and he's still roughly human-sized, things are interesting. But all of the stuff with him being really small and fighting with spiders and cats, those are really boring, and they all seem really fake.
Yeah, I didn't like the book either. I agree that the idea of a shrinking man is kind of ridiculous, and I think the way that they handled it was even more ridiculous. And I think that the book suffered from kind of a large chunk of incoherent action, where there was so much explaining of what he was doing from his scale that he had to come up with all of these new terms to apply to things which we know about on an everyday basis, like a couch or...
Well, there's a million descriptions of small things like a paperclip and the words colossal, humongous, mm-hmm. massive, towering.
But also like, you know, folded piece of metal, you know, and then instead of just saying paperclip, 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 he says, you know, the folded piece of metal, the folded piece of metal, the yeah. folded piece of metal. And it really, it just at some point, you know, you're trying to keep track of so much stuff that you can't even tell what's going on with the action. And that seems to be the one thing
really,
as we look at Matheson's career that he's really, really weak at, and that's action. So a year after the book came out, the first Matheson movie based on one of his novels was released, and that was The Incredible Shrinking Man, which he wrote himself and which was directed by Jack Arnold.
Yeah.
What did you think about the movie?
I can't stand that movie. Okay. I really have a hard time with a lot of miniaturization stories, and I can't think of many that work at all, and this one doesn't really work at all, and there are a lot of problems with it, but probably the main problem is that the book deals with the social, like, metaphor of a man shrinking. Like, he's a guy who's losing his significance. He's literally shrinking, and it's, you know, a metaphor for a lot of, you know, paranoid fears of you know, the upper middle class white male losing his authority and power in a changing reality. Women are getting more authority. Minorities are becoming, you know, recognized as, you know, regular people, as significant as the upper middle class white male. And the upper middle class white male shrinking is a very paranoid thing, and part of it is that shrinking isn't really necessarily a bad thing. There are different ways of looking at the world, and being smaller doesn't mean you're less important.
Yeah, I don't like the movie either. I would say that it's better than the book, but just because it's better at conveying what's going on in the story, I can see the book being deeper and everything like that, but the book is just so frustrating to read because it's so hard to read. I mean, The Incredible Shrinking Man, it doesn't really have much more to offer. It's just sort of a telling of the story in a much more coherent way. But it's a stupid story, so, you know, that doesn't really have much to offer either. What about The Incredible Shrinking Woman, which was the movie that Joel Schumacher made back in 1981 with Lily Tomlin as the shrinking woman?
You know, it's a situation where, you know, you're making a movie out of something and you don't really need to be making this movie. It's not motivated by anything other than possibly being humorous. And it's not as funny as it would need to be in order to be deserving of being made.
Well, I mean, I can see some of the things that they were trying to do in terms of the message or whatever. You know, they were trying to look at woman's place in society and especially the housewife and stuff. Mm-hmm. All that being said, I don't think that it really had much to say about that stuff. And because of that, it's not really worth watching because it certainly isn't funny. And they do take a lot of liberties with the story, which I guess is to be expected. But that's perfectly fine and valid. It's just that the direction that they choose to go in is not any more compelling than the direction that the original source material wanted to go in. You know, as we talked about in that episode, at the time of Matheson's death, he was working on an adaptation of The Shrinking Man for the screen once again, this time with his son, Richard Matheson Jr., or RC, I guess, as he's known to his friends. And when we were there, I asked the panel whether or not they thought this movie would ever see the light of day now that Matheson is gone. And they seemed to think that there was some hope for that because RC Matheson really looks to be the keeper of his father's flame and a skilled writer in his own right. And because of that, a lot of people think that the Matheson legacy will be carried on and the final Matheson movie may be seen. So that might be something to look forward to. 1959, Richard Matheson wrote two novels that were turned into movies, the first of which was A Stir of Echoes, which was about a guy who is hypnotized at a party and gains some sort of supernatural mental abilities. So what did you think of A Stir of Echoes, the book?
I think it is a perfectly well-written book. The approach to the question of ghosts in the afterlife is handled interestingly. But it's kind of a played-out form. It's kind of a difficult thing to do these days. There are too many ghost stories. There are too many stories about that. The hypnotism is a good angle for the story when it was written. And nowadays it seems kind of bizarre that people would have concerns about hypnotism awakening supernatural abilities.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really look at it from that angle, but just reading the book as a story, I thought it was really well done. It's definitely up there towards the top of my list of Matheson books that we covered. I found that the character to be very likable and his journey to be very, very compelling. I did not necessarily feel that way about the movie, which came out 40 years later, that was written and directed by David Capp. That was called Stir of Echoes, and I found it to be sort of a stripped-down, mean, ugly version of the book. I was not fond of the movie at all. What did you think about the movie?
I don't know where you get mean and ugly. That's kind of weird to me. I didn't think the movie was mean and ugly. I thought it was inexplicably Bostonian. But it seemed like a perfectly decent adaptation of the story. I mean, they changed elements around in order to make it fit into the context, but that seems reasonable. And I think a lot of things that are in the movie that are changed are sort of insignificantly changed, sort of like changed mainly to just fit slightly better into the time frame that the story takes place in and how they can do it in a movie form. I think it works perfectly well. I think it works as well as the novel, and I don't think that the novel is particularly inspired. It's an interesting approach to the ghost story, and I think that both versions handle it rather intelligently.
Well, I guess Matheson agrees with you on this one. One of the things that we learned at the panel was that Matheson was very fond of the feature film version of Stir of Echoes and considers that to be probably the best movie adaptation of one of his works. So later that year, Matheson wrote another book called Ride the Nightmare, which was about a guy whose past catches up with him. He's trying to live out his perfect suburban life with his family and some people who were part of a job that went wrong in the past or something along those lines, come back to seek revenge. What did you think about Ride the Nightmare?
It's an interesting book. There are times where if you're critical about it, you'll think this particular moment is unmotivated and it's only happening in order to keep the story going, which is why there were times where it felt like 24 to me. But it felt like 24 with an extremely deep look at, you know, the existence of a person and the concept of moral transgressions and forgiveness and existence in a world of laws and lawlessness. And a lot of stuff is interesting about that. And it is a good read despite the surface level being in some way kind of contrived.
I pretty much agree with what you said. I enjoyed the book quite a bit, too. I think that it was cool to see him return to the non-supernatural stuff and tell just like a good piece of crime fiction. And I thought that the book was very compelling and exciting. And it did have a lot to say about, you know, people and, you know, them dealing with the past and trying to become better people and all that stuff. In 1970, Terrence Young made a version of the book as a movie with Charles Bronson called Cold Sweat, and that movie was not very good at all. It was really sort of revamped to become an action vehicle for Bronson, and by doing that, it lost a lot of the subtext, which is what made the movie, or which is what made the book so great. So in 1971, after a 12-year hiatus, Matheson returned to writing novels with Hell House, which is a haunted house story about a group of individuals who go to a haunted house and try to investigate what exactly is going on in there. So what do you think about Hell House?
It's a haunted house story. It feels like a lot of haunted house stories. It's a well-written haunted house story. But ultimately, you've seen the story in movies a million times. You've probably read a few books of haunted house stories. You're probably extremely well-versed in all of the elements of the story that this deals with. There are a few moments of interesting deviation from the norm, mainly just the way that Matheson handles things. He has a unique approach to the subject of the supernatural, and he handles it well. But it is a haunted house story. That's basically it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we learned at the panel was that Matheson's inspiration for writing Hell House was because he was very fond of Robert Wise's The Haunting, even though he had hated the book that it was based on. So he kind of wanted to make a book which would do justice to Robert Wise's movie, I guess.
Sometimes you write something inspired by something, you know, and sometimes you write something in response to something. I think that, like, the story is, you know, that that Tolkien wrote The Lord of the Rings in response to the ring cycle. He, you know, like, some people do things because something offends them, and sometimes they do it because something inspires them. Apparently, this was a case of him doing one thing because of both.
Mm-hmm. Didn't really like the book all that much. I thought it kind of meandered and stuff.
A ghost story.
I think it could have been better if it was a bit tighter, but on the whole, not very good. Now, 2 years later, he wrote a movie called The Legend of Hell House, which was based on this book and directed by John Huff. And it really feels kind of like a Disney-fied version of his book, in a sense, you know,
not
something
which very Disney-fied.
No, but something which was so graphic in terms of both violence and sex, you know, being stripped down into something which was actually, at the time, rated PG.
It was touchstoned.
It's kind of weird. So, what did you think of Legend of Hell House?
If you enjoyed the book Hell House, and you see the movie, and you're not frustrated, then I don't know what you are. Maybe you're one of those machines that kills ghosts.
Yeah.
Because the movie is a very weakened version. It's like a very anemic version of the book.
Yeah.
A lot of things are faithfully kept intact in a way that makes you wonder why they didn't just change it to something better for movies.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of talk at this panel of people wanting to see a faithful adaptation of Hell House and whether or not that's something we would ever see. And the general consensus is that, you know, while we would want to see that, we're pretty much the only people who would want to see that. And if someone did try adapting it into a movie today, it would probably not go well. So 1975, Matheson decided to go in a different direction with his career and start writing some more romantic stories, the first of which was Bedtime Return, about a guy who sees a photo of an actress who's been dead for 75 years and comes up with the idea that it's his destiny to go back in time and fall in love with her. And then he does. So what did you think of Bedtime?
That is how it goes.
What did you think of Bedtime Returns?
Returns?
Bedtime Return.
The sequel could be called Bedtime Returns.
Yeah.
It is a story that is as weird as it sounds, and while it might sound interesting because it's so weird, it's not.
Yeah, I agree. I think that pretty much everything in it, from the time travel to the romance, was handled really terribly in sort of a cartoonish teenage fantasy type of way.
I disagree about the time travel.
And
it is handled much more intelligently than a guy arbitrarily building a time machine out of a car.
So yeah, I was not impressed by the book, and I wasn't really impressed by the movie either, which was 1980s Somewhere in Time, directed by Jeannot Zwark, and starring Christopher Reeve. What did you think about the movie Somewhere in Time?
Well, apparently some people love this movie. They're passionately in love with this movie, and they think it's absolutely brilliant, and I don't understand them.
That seemed to be a thing at the panel. A lot of the panelists were saying that this was their favorite of Matheson's works.
I could get that. Like I could see like latching onto it when I was a lot younger, because it is a very particular kind of weird story, and it does have that sort of that weird like obsessive quality where somebody could, you know, really latch onto it because it is particular. There really isn't another thing exactly like it. Unfortunately, the story is largely about a guy walking around in the past, and they didn't have the internet back then, so it was pretty dull.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the book Somewhere in Time and the movie the book Bedtime Return and the movie Somewhere in Time are pretty similar.
You can call it Somewhere in Time. They do now.
Yeah.
You can't even get, I don't even know if you can get a thing that's called Bedtime Return anymore.
Right. And if you like one, you'll probably like the other, but I don't really like either. Well, in 1978, Matheson wrote the second book in his romance transcending blank duology, and that was What Dreams May Come, the novel which he considers to be his best. Whereas Bedtime Return is about love transcending time, What Dreams May Come is about love transcending death. So what did you think about What Dreams May Come?
I think What Dreams May Come is a fantastic book, and it is, I believe, the best book that Richard Matheson wrote. And I could explain why that's different from his best novel, but that would take like 40 minutes.
It's definitely up there for me as well. I thought that his portrayal of the afterlife in particular was very interesting, and I would put it up near the top. Definitely not as good as I Am Legend, but in the same level as Stir of Echoes and Ride the Nightmare, I think. But I would definitely recommend reading this book. The movie, not so much. 20 years later, Vincent Ward directed What Dreams May Come, starring Robin Williams. And what were your thoughts on that?
Oh, well, I said it's fantastic. There were changes made to the basic story, and I think all those changes were very good. It's a fantastically broken movie. It's totally broken, but it is very fascinating, very interesting, and totally worth watching. And I know you hate it, and I think that's crazy.
Yeah, I was bored to tears by the movie, and most of the changes that they made I thought were incredibly stupid, and I did hate it in a very special way. But it may not be the worst movie on this list, but it's the one that I hated the most. And apparently, on this movie, Matheson agrees with me. The one guy at the panel was saying that he hates this movie. It's probably his biggest disappointment outside of I Am Legend, or right up there with I Am Legend. And it's not well liked by Matheson. So any final thoughts on Richard Matheson as a novelist or a movie writer or anything?
Not as a novelist or as a movie writer, because that's like a tiny little sliver of his overall career and life. And I like, the most interesting thing about Richard Matheson is that he did a little bit of everything. And my favorite chapter in the Matheson life is when he was hired by Rod Serling to work on The Twilight Zone, the first season of The Twilight Zone, because that is a fantastic moment in history where Rod Serling was creating something that would eventually become an incredibly important artifact of history. And he had open submissions and thousands of scripts poured in, and they were all crap. And he said, I'm going to need a couple people to come in and write. And he hired Richard Matheson and Charles Beaumont. And Matheson wrote like a bunch of episodes for the first year of The Twilight Zone, and some of them were absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think that I Am Legend is probably his best work. I am also very fond of The Twilight Zone. That was my intro to Matheson as a writer, and, you know, things like Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, I still find to be absolutely amazing. It's been fun talking about Richard Matheson today, but this isn't the only thing we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
Great Sisko episodes.
I was definitely channeling the Sisko, but it's a great episode to watch that passion come out of him, that he is a passionate captain, you know, and man.
The Ready Room.
The Devil in the Dark.
Wouldn't there be a point, if they can go through rocks so easily, that they would have depleted that entire planet of its resources in the last 50,000 years?
Decade.
Voyager STO.
Well, Voyager's pretty much the only series that hasn't had much content.
Oh, yeah, think about it. You've got loads from the original series, loads from the Next Generation, and you've got pretty much all of the main ones from Deep Space Nine, apart from the Vorta.
To the journey!
Kes.
Kind of like the reverse of a kangaroo. It's like this pouch on her back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That would be kind of unusual. It would be the most unusual maternity uniform ever.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
What dreams may come.
It's kind of like 1984. And just like in 1984, like, that guided tour is more interesting than most books that have an extremely compelling story.
Warp 5.
The Augments Arc.
You know, and as you say, all of this was about, from his perspective, trying to improve humanity and thinking he was doing the right thing, and he was not prepared to do absolutely anything for it. He wasn't prepared to kill another human being.
Trek News and Views.
A Taste of Armageddon.
So basically, some scientist goes to command and say, look, I've developed this new weapon. No, you can't do that. It's not in the rules.
Literary Treks.
Mission's End.
The question is, do you feel like Section 31 is overused? Everyone wants to use Section 31, and so they just keep popping up in every story, and I think sometimes it does a disservice to the idea of Section 31.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new shows for you every day, and you'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. And you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. So that's about it for Richard Matheson. Finally, we're going to be able to move on to what we were planning to do before Richard Matheson, which is Ronald D. Moore. And looking at his career as a television showrunner, we will be back next week with an episode that we recorded a long time ago with Matt from The Orb, talking about Ronald D. Moore's work in Star Trek. As always, you can find us on our website, CommentaryTrackStars.com, where we do our other show, Commentary Track Stars, or you can find us on Twitter at ComTrackStars, or email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. Or you can find us over on Trek.fm, where you can leave a comment by this episode or on the forum or anything like that. So that's about it for Richard Matheson, and we will be back next week. next week to talk about Ronald D. Moore.